Excuse me.
That's correct to an extent, but Mr. Chair, Representative Manis, I mean, I think from the legislature's perspective, one of the purposes of a sunset is basically to force the legislature to revisit the issue. So in actuality, you could, I mean, as easily repeal the sunset and continue the current law as opposed to putting everything back into place.
All right.
My experience has been that most sunsets get repealed and what has been tried gets implemented, which is not to say that would happen, but you would be forced to re-examine this issue two sessions from now.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mannix.
I could see making a distinction between the provisions in the bill, which simply correct some technical things. We could make a sunset provision that just lists the substantive changes that we've made and say these will be sunsetted in 4 years, absent some legislation. That I could see. And that'll take care of the technical stuff, and we won't have to fool around with that again. But I don't see the waiting period as being a singular issue to sunset. I think that there's a number of things you want to readdress after these studies are completed, and the waiting period is one of them. But that does, I think, put us back to where we are today on the waiting period. If the sunset goes into effect, we're down to the 5 days. I think it's 5-day waiting period on handguns. Puts us back to, so the NRA would have to recognize that they're in no worse position than they are now, and I would think that that would be an acceptable approach.
I would also assume that the sunset would go in effect at the end of the 67th legislative session. Is that right? We're in the 65th now, and sunsets go into effect at the end of a session, so you'd have all session to debate what was going to happen.
Where is the NRA today?
Nevada and D.C.
They went back to Washington. They come in just long enough to tell us what we're going to do.
I would suggest, travel. I mean, the whole notion of what we're doing is trying to say that when McCollum comes online, we're going to get rid of our forms and our system because we're figuring it's not going to be necessary. The McCollum system is not going to have everything in it that we wanted, that our system has. But I pointed out the problem with the language that we currently have is that it's so inclusive of what we do in Oregon that it's possible that the federal system will handle it a little bit differently, and it's never going to coincide, and the Oregon system will never sunset, which is no sunset. So what I would suggest is that we look for something like McCollum plus X number of years and say that McCollum plus 4 or McCollum plus 3 is when the sunset happens to the fingerprinting, and all the police obligations to send the forms back along with it, that we would say that because after 18 months upon implementation of McCollum, they're going to have some kind of report back on how to do the rest of this stuff. We give them 18 more months to get it implemented. McCollum plus 3 would probably be adequate time for them to
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Matt.
I understand that, but then we get into some complications in trying to follow what's happening on the federal level in terms of timing. And I like something that's clear for us to know ahead of time, what is our timeline to get back to this. What we could do is, if we say 4 years, say July 1, 1993, there's a sunset, we could also, well, the next legislature or the one after could say, well, things are going slower than expected, we're going to have to extend by 2 years. They have the whole opportunity to revisit the issue at that time in light of more current information. And I buy the idea of saying, well, July 1, 1993, we're going to revert to what we had before. Unless we extend or modify, we have to take some action.
Where are we at, dude? Representative Clark?
I mean, I'm still the same place I was before, either. I mean, I'm...
Do you want to take a straw poll vote?
No, I'm real frustrated.
I missed the earlier part of the meeting. Do you have a problem with the 4-year sunset?
I have a little bit of a problem conditioning what we're doing on something that the federal government might or might not do.
Well, 4-year sunset won't do that.
No, right. That's correct. But then at that point, the Speaker's office is telling us that they don't support that.
If it's for the whole bill, that I could see that being beneficial. I don't know how much a problem that would be. As long as it's not just the waiting period.
I thought you testified earlier that the Speaker's office would not support a straight sunset on the whole bill.
I said the whole bill or the waiting period, and I said knew the waiting period would not be acceptable. I don't know if I came back.
The Attorney General's office, I think, raises a legitimate concern that if you sunset the whole bill, there's ripple effects all the way throughout Oregon revised statutes, which causes perhaps some technical, perhaps some substantive problems.
But we could have what I call a limited four-year sunset on the substantive changes made by the bill, not the technical corrections. We can specify section by section what's being sunsetted. Council can put that together.
Well, and realistically, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I mean, what Larry is saying is true, but the practical effect of putting a sunset that goes into effect at the end of the session is that you're going to come back and rediscuss the issue anyway, and it's all going to go up and come down again regardless.
That's fine.
So, I think the fact that there's numerous statutes being changed, I mean, you can change them for 4 years, and at the end of that four-year period, you just look at what was done and how it happened and decide what you like and what you don't like and change it again. I mean, you know, every 2 years the statutes change. So, so he's stating the obvious in part. I mean, and the sunset doesn't go in effect, it's not like we're sunsetting it during an interim. When you sunset it at the end of a session, you're forcing the issue. So
Mr. Chair, one other point, just for the record, I'm real frustrated that the NRA comes in, they threaten to pull their support for the bill, they stir the pot up, and then they don't have the courtesy to show up this afternoon. It's at least bad manners, in my view, and maybe a little bit more than that.
I want to get kind of a
see if we can go this way with it. I think we can go. Being that McCollum is a basically a check system to decide whether or not somebody is eligible, and since McCollum is basically at some point supposed to align our system, and that they're supposed to 18 months after McCollum have all these criteria drawn up according to the bill. This is assuming McCollum ever comes online, which is a big if. I think it's probably pretty fair and the simplest way to handle the matter if we pick McCollum plus X number of years. McCollum plus four would give us McCollum plus two legislative sessions. And that would also give them 2.5 years past their 18 months to get the other stuff up. Now, if they don't have the other stuff up, we're just on the federal system without it. If they got more than this up after 4 years, then we're on the federal system anyway, but we're picking the date certainly after the phone.
Mr. Chair.
We're going to get rid of the Oregon system.
Your Honor, if the chair wants to pursue that, I think that you need to be much more specific about which part of McCollum that you're going to tie it to, because there's a... there are
which part?
There's a zillion and one parts in here.
I would ask which part were they referring to in the amendments that were brought to us from the work group today?
Mr. Chairman, Lawrence Young, the Attorney General's Office. I apologize for the form that the amendments were brought to you. I wasn't expecting that they would be distributed to the committee. What the work group talked about today was the actual enactment of an identification system that provides for immediate identification. And so that was the
of
all four categories of people that are listed on alternative one. This language was in effect drafted. I made a few technical changes afterwards, but this was basically what everybody signed off on. So we were talking about the implementation of an immediate identification system that allows, in Oregon, the identification through use of biological factors, convicted felons, essentially subsection 2 is your civil commitments, subsection 3 is your misdemeanors involving violence, and subsection 4 was use of alcohol or drug as an element. And people convicted of a crime that involves the use of alcohol or a controlled substance as an element of the crime.
Let's do something. I guess the initial McCollum system is going to just include the convicted felons. Is that right?
That is my understanding, yes.
What about this immediate identification? What if McCollum includes some kind of waiting period? Or there's an agreement that it won't? What if they can't get any kind of an immediate identification?
I think that's what the Attorney General of the United States' task force is looking at. Is it possible to have instantaneous identification, and if not, how long is it going to take?
That McCollum could be 100 years or something. Who knows?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
With all due respect to our federal Congress, that's the concern I have. You never know when they're going to do anything. And I'm concerned about giving anybody X plus 4 years because X may never happen at the federal level. That's my concern, and I, because of that, I'd rather just have a definite time in real Oregon time that we can look to.
We could, to my point out, we could still come back and get rid of the system in another legislative session even before McCollum comes online. Next session, they could come back and say, we're not going to wait for X.
Do you want to sunset it in 2 years? I'd rather sunset it in 2 years, knowing that the study is just being finished in the next session, than to tie it to some federal act that may or may not happen.
Well, if the federal,
and then
if the federal
we just squeeze the next legislature into looking at it.
If the federal act never happens, then we're left with our current with the system that we're creating in this bill. Understand that?
Well, no. If we sunset it in 2 years, period, we're not. We can revisit.
If we're sunsetting it based on the federal act, we're just going to be staying with our current system, which includes the waiting period.
And I don't want a sunset based on the federal act because I never know what they're going to do. This way, I know that we can revisit and take a look at the federal landscape and decide the Oregon version.
Well, we could revisit this without having to have it sunsetted.
Do you have an aversion to a sunset? If you want to make it 6 years, that's okay with me, too. I'd rather go 6 years, 4 years, or 2 years than to go attached to a federal
act. I have the same concern that the gentleman from the Attorney General's office has that if we sunset the whole act, we've got a whole bunch of statutes being changed here, and we've got to go back through and change everything back along with whatever forms are being kept and everything else, and it's just going to be anarchy, dogs and cats living together kind of stuff. Fire and brimstone from the sky.
I was going to say we do that
every session. I mean,
Do you want a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Well, I'm going to see if we got any consensus at all to go with the McCollum plus X number of years. If anybody is comfortable with that or uncomfortable, if people aren't comfortable with that, we'll do whatever the committee wants to do. How are you with McCollum
Chair,
plus years?
With all due respect, I would just as soon have us state what we're going to do with our statute and when and why. And I think we understand that we're doing it to see where we are with a federal law which might or might not come online by then. But I would be more comfortable just with a straight date.
Chairman, I'm not interested in tying it to McCollum either. I think it's developed. In the third sentence here, it'd probably be more appropriate to have developing and identify even a starting point, in my view, with McCollum. So tying it to something that is continuing to be ongoing, we're never going to sunset. So I just think you pick out a sunset date and you sunset. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not too much into sunrise, so... Tough to ask me about sunset.
We know where you're at, Mr. Mack.
But I'm willing to do it in terms of the substantive elements of the bill, not technical changes that we're making that aren't tied to the substantive elements.
Let's, if we can on this issue, I think maybe it's one that we would do better to handle in retrospect than with a sunset. And certainly we're going to maybe need a sunset of some sort, but let's try to spend some time on our own talking to people and evaluating this issue. We'll get on to some other ones.
Well, can we make a decision and then change it later if we find out we're wrong? Because that's the only way we're going to get through this bill.
Well, McGuire, I think, is a member of the working group by now, isn't he?
We don't necessarily frat to be here. He's not allowed to be here.
I'm surprised.
He's not allowed to...
The National NRA could come in. I'm surprised he couldn't.
I have a motion, Mr. Chairman.
The only problem that I have with that, Representative Maddox, is this bill could fly right through without a sunset period. It's simple enough to put a 2-year sunset on it when we get to the end of the bill. The question would be if we want to have some kind of a sunset, such as the working group has brought to us based on McCollum, and I'm saying that that maybe these people have more knowledge in this area than we do, and we probably ought to try to spend some time talking to them, but we don't probably have the time tonight. So I'd like to, if we're going to go with a 2-year sunset and we decide after we've heard what they have to say that's the best thing to do, or a 4-year sunset that's simple enough to put that on for the whole bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one comment, please.
Yes, Representative Maddox.
My attitude is that I don't mind a group of experts coming in with their comments and ideas and hearing them and looking at them, but they have got to convince me, the elected representative from District 32, who sits on this subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives, that it's a good idea. And if they don't convince me, that's too bad. And then I end up voting yes or no on each issue in the bill. So I'm willing to hear all, and I'm always willing to listen to what the working group out there has to say, but they aren't the elected representatives. And so if I don't like their idea, I don't mind saying, let's do something else. And then if they come back and say that they can't buy it, I say, well, that's the way it goes. Will the House pass it or not? That's the way it goes. In other words, I'm expressing a little bit of concern about a process where we don't always have to go running off to a self-appointed group to tell us what to do. And I'm not suggesting that they've taken that role. They are being very careful about only suggesting things to us, making recommendations, presenting information, and they are a group with balanced expertise. But if their balanced expertise doesn't convince me as an elected representative, then I say, let's move forward and get on to the next issue, but start resolving these issues, particularly since today is May 30th, 1989, and there's a lot of other bills on a lot of other committees that we've got to deal with.
With that, we're moving forward on to the next issue. I think Representative Dwyer might have a comment. You have something, Representative Dwyer?
Well, pretty decent. If I may, let me come up here.
Please, sit with the committee and
be part of our work. But the intention of the law is to try to filter out those people that may not be competent to own a gun, and it seems obvious to me, and we were talking about McCollum, and I agree that we should never preface anything we do based on what the federal government may do, because not only may they not do it, but we've got requirements in this bill that certainly they won't have, and that's in terms of alcohol and drugs, in terms of mental competence and all that they don't address. So we'll never conform to McCollum in the true sense. So if we're concerned about whether or not we don't want to have felons buying these kinds of weapons, maybe it's sensible to phase out or back into the present system that we have, in the sense that this is just a suggestion. In the 1991 session or the next session, we'll know how effective it's been. We've been living with 5 days. So in 1991, I'd phase down to 10 days. And maybe we may have McCollum by then, but we'll probably have the system online where we can do the kind of check that's required in 10 days. And in 1993, which is 4 years hence, we'll either know where we are by then, and that way we're not, you know.
Thank you, Mr. Warren. You'd have at least 2 members of the committee, if not 3 or more, supporting that. Would you on that? But somehow on the balance of the current strike, that would anger some of the people. Makes them a lot more difficult.
What's our intention? I mean,
if
what?
If I had my druthers, I wouldn't bother to wait.
Well, what is our intention? What is the purpose of the bill is what I'm saying. Is the purpose of the bill to keep these kinds of guns out of the hands of people that are not competent to own them? If it is...
Well, appreciate the input. We'll try to address the sunset issue, if at all. We don't ever actually have to address the issue. That's one of the options that we have.
Well, the only,
but
if I may,
the work group is bringing forward one notion, and then we're looking at sunsetting the bill altogether. And I don't know that we've had a lot of serious comments on that at this
point.
Well,
if I may, Mr. Chairman, to that end, I just mentioned that you're asking the sheriffs and all the other people to implement a program that's not this program. And if you sunset this bill, even if you sunset this bill, they're going to be on another standard. They're going to be to a biannual issuance of permits. So you couldn't just sunset the whole bill because you put their whole process out of kilter. So anything you do to sunset has to be specific in terms of really what it sunsets, because you just can't turn back the clock and say, okay, we're going back to the status quo, when you're really not going back to the status quo. You're going back to something that you put in place by invoking and passing this bill. So that's something the committee is going to have to deal with. You just don't go back to the status quo, because you no longer will have it.
Thank you, Representative Dwyer. Okay, let's bounce through some other issues. I got a bunch to bring up throughout the bill, and I don't know if we have any bigger ones we're going to bumble across, but we probably will.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Before Clark. Before we leave that issue, I just would like to make a point for the record that as the bill stands now, we have not put a sunset in it. And I would hope that the members of the working group that are here would communicate that message to the NRA, and if the NRA wants their sunset, then they need to come talk to us about it, because I'm prepared to put a definite sunset on it for a lot of reasons, but I'm kind of like Representative Mannix. I need to be convinced of some things, and if they care about the bill, then they can pay us a visit and talk to us about it.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Clark. On the working off of the dash 10s, though, we have dash 11s.
No, we're on dash 11s, which
dash
should 11s. Be packets. Yeah. Should be in front of you.
I'm always one behind on these.
Every time we meet, we get a new set.
Yeah. Just when I get used to the other ones, too. Okay. On the definition of firearm, I have a couple little cleanup measures where there currently isn't any exception in there for antique firearm. We define antique firearm, but then we don't say under the definition of firearm that antique firearms are accepted or excluded from the definition of firearm.
I'm sorry, Council.
So I'll make that as a motion. Council, are you ready to move that?
That the definition of antique firearms that's included in the bill is excluded from firearms
so what,
under 2.
I think we can handle it one of two ways. We can say firearm means weapon except for an antique firearm, or we can say at the end of readily capable of use as a weapon, we can say but does not include antique firearms.
Well, why don't you just do it conceptually, and I will talk to Legislative Council, and we will decide how to do it.
I don't know that we have any. The antique firearm weapons, I think, are going to be the black powder firearms in most cases. Do we have any use of the language by the action of black powder in the definition of firearm?
Yeah, wait a minute. I'm not sure that you can. I think by. I don't know enough about guns, but. I don't know if you can use one definition to define another definition. It doesn't make sense to me. It seems to me if you have two definitions, one of anti-firearm and one of firearm, that they by definition exclude each other.
Well, let's make sure of that. So
okay.
What I'm going to say, what we're going to say, we'll just add it. We'll add it at the end here. This will be my conceptual. We'll delete black powder or from line 21. And after weapon on line 22, we'll add, but does not include, should it be antique firearms or an antique firearm?
Well, if you're going to rely on the definition in the act, it doesn't matter.
We should say, but does not include antique firearms under subsection 1, et cetera, et cetera. That's cleanup stuff.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
Do I understand what you're saying here is that well, we want to exclude antique firearms from certain provisions, but we don't want to change around the definition of firearm itself. I mean, I can imagine someone coming up with a black powder modern firearm just to get around the definition, saying, well, it doesn't use smokeless powder. But if we just later, if we want to exempt antique firearms, we've done that. We can have a provision that just exempts them from the provisions of this act.
And that has been done. Legislative Council and I have been working to exempt anti-firearms from the appropriate provisions of this act so long as that the weapons are not, in fact, also firearms. And anti-firearms and firearms as defined in this act are not the same thing.
Well, antique firearm, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
As I read, this antique firearm is an exemption from firearm, but actually there is an overlap because it's possible, for instance, to take an antique firearm and I would assume use smokeless powder in it. I'm not an expert in this, but I assume you could do that.
I think some of the older weapons do use smokeless powder.
Probably blow up the weapon in the process. But
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dwyer.
If I may, just to be helped clarify, The definition of antique firearm makes no reference to the kind of powder.
Right. I have no problem right now with the language that's here.
So I think that what you'd want to do is reference antique firearm as described in Section 1 of the Act, if you want to make the exemption to be consistent and not get into powder types.
Let's plan on, I don't know if we have any comments from anybody on this issue.
It appears
we do.
Powder.
We can't seem to have an issue. What do you have to tell us about antique firearms? Anything in particular?
About antique firearms?
Yeah, well, just as you see what we're trying to do with this? We're trying to make sure it's acted appropriately. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Stephen Dorsey from Eugene, Oregon. I'm ex-captain of ordnance at Springfield Armory, Rock Island Arsenal, any number of Army arsenals, ordnance tech intel specialist from the U.S. Army, and I'm now an antique weapons dealer in Eugene International. I agree with Representative Dwyer in staying away from black powder as a mechanism, as a vehicle, because the federal regulation, well, there has been some discussion, though. The federal definition of antique firearms is pre-1898, and that does include the, I hate to use the term, the sunrise of the smokeless powder era, and you're going to get into a hassle that's unnecessary.
I might point out, we missed a point here. My point was we were going to exclude black powder weapons altogether from the definition of firearm, not try to change the definition of antique firearm, but exclude black powder from that one. I have a bunch of friends that are muzzle loaders.
My point is, though, Mr. Chairman, that the federal definition, which has worked very well since the federal law has been in place, includes a large number of early smokeless powder weapons.
Point is well taken. I'm going to make the motion that we delete from line 21 black powder or, and we add to line 22, but does not, wait a minute here, line 22, but does not include antique firearms as under section 1, subsection 1, et cetera, et cetera. Council, can we do that?
If you can use one definition to define another definition, we can. I'll have to flip to the council.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm not comfortable with it.
I call it lawyer. It's lawyer-esque, I think.
In regard to your motion, it seems to me that people who are using black powder weapons today, the muzzle loaders and that sort of thing, are usually, if not almost always, using replicas of old-time black powder weapons, and we've already said that that's an antique. Any replica of any firearm described in A is also an antique. So if I've got a flintlock that I made yesterday, it still can be an antique as long as it's a replica. And the only group that we're talking about then in terms of your amendment is someone who comes up with a modern design of a black powder weapon. And I'm not willing to define something like that as excluded from the Act, because I could probably come up, working with gentlemen such as the witness here, with a modern weapon that uses black powder that could be pretty dangerous. Could be a repeating arm. It could be a lot of things. So I'm speaking against the amendment.
I think that is one objection. Are there any other objections to the amendment?
I ask that we call the roll.
Roll call on the amendment, please.
Mr. Chair, clarify the motion, please.
Got a motion to, on line 21 of the -11 amendments, delete black powder or, and line 22, add a section that will say, but does not include antique firearms as under section 1, subsection 1, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it would be, I think that would be your appropriate language.
Okay.
I don't think it's.
That's going to be slightly conceptual for council, since I'm real bad with the subsection 1 type.
Aye.
Any a discussion, questions, otherwise? Please call the roll.
Still aye.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Chair Calhoun.
Aye. Motion carries. Yep. I think we've got maybe the same problem in our definition of handgun, which doesn't include black powder in there, so we're happy about that. We'd probably want to make certain that we have the same exception, the but the exception that we have in firearm under handgun, to make sure that those are appropriately exempted where you have an antique firearm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think it's lawyer-esque. If it's not quite right, I think we could probably get it in somehow into the proper form, but that would be the easiest way to do it, would be to just hook the butt on at the end of it.
So you want to, but does not include antique firearms to also be added on to the handgun definition?
Yeah. Does not include antique firearms as defined under Section 1, Subsection 1 of 166.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
Why don't we just have a single section that says that this 1989 Act and the current handgun waiting period do not apply to antique firearms as defined in this 1989 Act, in addition to what we just did.
And then, there'd be another way to handle it. There's more than one way to skin a cat, I guess.
Is that where you're heading?
Because you're really going to talk about long guns, too, I would think.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dwyer.
You're splitting hairs here. You'll be here forever.
Forever.
Let me tell you, I think that what you need to do is you have to define firearm to
That makes everybody happy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I cannot say that that is going to make law enforcement happy at all. I think they're going to be upset with that still.
They're going to want long guns.
They're going to want firearms, period, and they're not going to want 5-year limitation.
Currently, it's only handguns. Is that right?
But what this committee did on page 4 in line, whatever line it was, line 12,
11.
Or line 11, you made it illegal for any division of state or local government to compile or maintain any information on lawful purchases of firearms. That not only outlaws them keeping records on the local level, it also outlaws the study. You have conflicting legislation, and you can get around it probably, but, you know, in essence, there's also an argument you're outlawing keeping records for the study.
Well, we contemplated that in the committee. We're going to exempt the study from this section so they can keep them for the 1 year.
All right, in response to the rest of that, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, conceptually. Representative Clark. Certainly. Please note on the record that Representative Clark is excused for the rest of the evening. Representative Mannix.
The intention here, and I'd like this to be drafted into an amendment, is that we are exempting, we're not going to apply this provision to the study. So we're going to exempt the study from this provision. But further, my long-term intention is not to allow the keeping of records on long guns, absent some statutory change in the future, only the keeping of records on handguns. And I'd like to hear the case for doing it for longer than 5 years. Is there a reason why they want to do it for more than 5 years? Besides the fact that, sure, crimes can happen way into the future.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, I do not know personally of the reason that they would want it for 5 years. I would assume that the reason they would want it is because they are able to solve crimes by being able to check those particular records. We can certainly get some testimony from some local law enforcement agencies that have experience with that presented to the committee at the next hearing.
Mr. Chairman? Of course, what we're heading into there is gun registration, which is one of the concerns that some of us have from a constitutional perspective, Oregon as well as federal. And I'd like to know that I could purchase a handgun and 5 years from now, from then on, it's not known that I have a handgun in official records. I'll say this with a little bit of a smile, but we need to remember that there were some pretty basic Jeffersonian concepts behind the notion that someday we may have a tyranny taking over our democracy, and some of us may have to defend our freedoms. And it may sound strange coming from a representative from Salem, but some of us want to maintain some protection for citizens to privately be able to maintain their future protection. And there's this fine balance between crime control, and we all want to support that, but also maintaining our private ownership of weapons. And maybe 10 years would be a better balance. I don't know how far back the studies would go, that you can keep the handgun purchase records for 10 years. That'll help you with 99% of your crime studies.
I think the assertion was it's not the 10 years so much as it is they want the all firearms, they want rifles too.
And I don't know if the committee's willing to give them that. I don't think we need to get any comments. Representative Mannix, why don't you please make your motion? And if,
all right,
the committee, if you have support in the committee, we'll just move it into the bill.
I want to limit the retention of handgun. One, no retention of long gun records, except for purposes of the study. The study basically will be exempt from this section on page 4, beginning on line 10. When the study is over, though, local government will have the opportunity to maintain handgun purchase records for up to 5 years. May not maintain them after 5 years. No one may maintain long gun firearms records. I don't include in that, of course, there's a lot of record keeping done in regard to machine guns and so forth, but that's normally federal.
We also need to put the notwithstanding, or so they don't, they can but don't have to keep the records for 5 years. Giving law enforcement another strong tool to crack down on crime out there, counsel.
For 5 years.
Got it.
Any objection to the motion? Okay, adopted. Okay, that was one of the concerns. What was the other one?
I think that there was some concern raised, and this committee has already addressed it, but just to flag it, about persons who were convicted of driving while under the influence being a prohibited person on the committee's prohibited persons list.
I think we addressed that under my life is hard speech.
Yes, I think that's exactly what we did. I just wanted to flag it for the committee's information.
Okay. I think there's a concern, where the heck is it? Counsel, where's this at in the bill, and we can take a look at this real quickly.
Where's what?
The section involving the...
You need to be a little bit more specific.
Where's the section involving the alcohol?
It's on the...
I've seen it in here.
Section 3.
Page 10.
Page 10.
Line 15.
Line 15.
Line 15.
Thank you, Mr. Young.
Okay, section or page 10, line 15. This would prohibit you from possessing a firearm or from having a firearm transferred to you.
Either.
This would prohibit you from being able to possess
a firearm unless you had gotten relief granted to you under section whatever of the act.
The way it's currently written, I guess if you were a liquor store...
They changed the number.
It's a... What's that?
Number section. I used to know what it was.
The way it's currently written, there doesn't appear to be any kind of time limit on the side of the Desert Council.
On which?
On the convicted of a crime element of which is the use of alcohol.
No, there is not a time period as there is for misdemeanors of violence.
So if you get one DUI, you're never going to be able to bear a gun in the state of Oregon.
Unless you get relief granted under the provisions of the Act.
Unless you get relief.
Well, that I'm willing to be a little bit easier on. The other one is, I mean, if you get up to a felony DUI, it's pretty heavy.
We should have a felony DUI in the state of Oregon, in which case we would just have this little problem solved for us.
But I'm talking about the first DUI, which turns out to be what?
You can get a diversion on your first one, but of course that diversion doesn't necessarily mean the person did anything wrong. They might have just...
Well, I think if the committee wanted to be consistent...
Which would be at first.
Then one way to handle this would be to put a 4-year window on it, as there is for misdemeanors of violence, because most of the things that are going to be under H, or anything that's going to be under H, is going to be a misdemeanor. So this way all your misdemeanors are going to be handled similarly.
I agree, and I so move, Mr. Chairman. 4-year...
This would fall under misdemeanor of... Violence? No.
No, but there is a 4-year window on misdemeanors of violence. Since felonies are not included, anything that would be included under H is going to, by definition, be a misdemeanor. So all the misdemeanors ought to be handled the same way. I mean, should the committee choose to handle misdemeanors the same way, then the way to handle them would be to pick the same window.
This would include, for instance, elements which is the use of alcohol. It might include furnishing alcohol. It might include... what is the thing when there's a person that sells over the counter to somebody that's underage? That must be a misdemeanor also.
But if you had a controlled substance offense, but it was a felony, then you're going to be in a different category. So anything that's left, when you figure that your felonies are out off the top, anything that's left under H are going to be misdemeanors by definition.
What is left? We've got driving while suspended based on a driving under the influence be included in this section?
No.
Okay. We've got DUI certainly would be included in this section. Yeah. And we've got furnishing would be included in this section.
Certain of your controlled substances things.
Well, I'm talking about furnishing alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
there's not a lot.
Is furnishing involve the transfer or the use of the alcohol?
Actually, it probably wouldn't.
Furnishing would involve transfer of alcohol.
So that might be excluded under this. What if we put a section, what if we said, I'm a little bit concerned that a person gets one DUI and they lose their gun rights. Because I know a lot of...
They don't lose them, they just have them temporarily.
First DUI, you can get diversion. So you don't get a conviction.
And you're not convicted of a crime anyway.
You can't always get diversion if it's a DUI that involves an injury to another person and there's a few other categories. You can't always get diversion on a DUI. Bad actor can't afford it. A lot of times people can't afford the diversion program, so they get their chain yanked and they wind up getting it anyway. What if we said in here we took the alcohol section out of here and we put in there involved three acts involving the use of alcohol, so that if you got three DUIs, since we probably should have a felony DUI, or we said three DUIs within a 5 or 7 year period. I think we should have a felony DUI for those circumstances, but unfortunately we don't in Oregon. Therefore, we could maybe lay the groundwork for felony DUI in Oregon in this gun statute.
I would just pick the same window.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
There's still the rehabilitation provision where you can petition for rehabilitation and show that the circumstances were not such that you should have your gun rights taken. But I have a quick idea for you.
This would be the section that bogs down the courts, because there are a lot of people out there who pop for DUIs that don't particularly want to...
Well, why don't we put in a particular provision that says, a separate provision that says, in any proceeding involving driving under the influence, the judge may make a separate finding that this proceeding should not affect... Well, that gets too complicated in record-keeping, I guess.
I was trying to think. Trouble.
We're going to have Bill Linden in here again on this. We don't want to... Oh, no.
I don't like what we've done to the civil commitment statute.
Are we... would I have any consensus if we said if you get three DUIs, if you have three offenses, the element of which the use is of alcohol within a 7-year period, suffice? So we would just say has been convicted of a crime, an element of which is the use of controlled substances.
Mr. Chairman?
Or an offense to condition of sentence has been, what about or as a condition of sentence has been ordered to participate in a substance abuse counseling treatment program? Representative Mannix.
I don't think that. Well, I like the idea of saying, first of all, that we're going to stick to 4 years as a time frame. In fact, I'm still thinking that on the mental health side, we should have stuck to 4 years just so people can remember what all the provisions of this act are supposed to be. It sounds like a simplistic reason, but sometimes consistency helps in following the statute. But here, I understand your idea, which is a first-time conviction in certain circumstances shouldn't be so heavy. And when I look at the fact that we're already going to say misdemeanors involving violence are covered for 4 years, a lot of these controlled substances crimes may have been covered by the misdemeanors involving violence, or they're covered by the felony provisions. So I wouldn't mind saying has been twice convicted, and then you've in the past 4 years. So you've shortened the time frame, but we're sticking to 4 years, and you say twice convicted or twice has been ordered to participate in a substance abuse counseling or treatment program. How does that sound to you?
Representative Miller, that sounds... I think a little bit more fair. What do you think about that, Representative Miller?
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe as you've expressed more fair, but I'm more inclined to just go with a 4-year period.
For just one offense?
One offense.
So if you get one DUI, you're not going to be about
unless.
That's going to shove a lot of people into the courts on going to try to get relief, I would think.
you have conflicting interests, I guess. You have interests in highways, and you've got interests in owning a firearm.
It'd be great for the TV campaign that they have going. You're going to lose your license, you're going to lose your guns.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
be one of the best things. Yes, Representative Mannix.
By analogy, we've already said for youngsters that any crime involving alcohol, whether or not a motor vehicle is involved, they lose their driver's license, knowing that that's one of the most important things to them and hoping that that'll serve a deterrent effect. If gun owners know that driving under the influence and being convicted for it means that for 4 years they won't be able to possess a gun, that's a pretty heavy deterrent to going out there and getting juiced and driving.
We're going to have all these drunk people out there without firearms.
I think we'll have a lot more sober hunters.
We'll have just
a lot fewer accidents.
You can just see that all the gun owners shooting at the weaving people that are drunk out there, knowing that that person's not a gun owner. I hate to ostracize our non-gun owners.
And there's still the rehabilitation petition provision. I'm going to stick with Representative Miller on this. I'll back off and say 4 years, and let them seek rehabilitation if they think they're okay.
We're going to have to bust this out still, so it's going to have to say has been convicted of a crime or element of which is the use of controlled substances or an offense contained in the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, period.
Why do you have to back? You can be convicted of driving while under the influence of controlled substances. Convicted of DUII is applied to drugs as well as alcohol.
Right.
I don't think you want to.
Realistically, this is only going to apply to non-felonies anyway, because obviously if it's a felony, it goes in a different section.
That's correct.
So we can say,
and add the 4-year window. I think that's what Representative Miller and Mannix.
Representative Mannix, do you have some language for this?
Just add within the pre 4 years prior to the application.
Within the previous 4 years, not anything else. Within the previous 4 years.
This is going to be great for the TV ad campaign.
Within the previous 4 years has been, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Representative Mannix, I'm going to just pick up the language that's on line 5 at the end of that sentence and put it down below if that's what you want to do.
Well, this isn't an application at that point.
Yeah, it is.
No person shall sell, deliver, or otherwise transfer a firearm to any person who...
Your conviction, for your conviction period... When you're looking at whether or not you're convicted, you look at your conviction.
I'm just saying, this isn't an application provision. In fact, I don't know why application is on line 5.
Oh.
Within the 4 prior years. We have a technical problem here.
Okay. I will clean that up.
So let's not use the language from line 5, but instead correct line 5.
Yeah,
just say within the previous 4 years has been.
Okay.
We'll try to flag that and bring it up again, but that sounds good. We'll put the 4-year limit on it at least. I sort of wonder if maybe the twice convicted might not be a better system.
Do a little review of the full subcommittee when I take another look at it.
Of course, we could probably make the relief section of this bill part of our normal driving under the influence.
I think this gentleman wants to say something.
Please pull a chair up out there at the witness table, and we'll. We can make this part of our normal DUI proceeding so that during sentencing a DUI, the judge could grant relief under the gun section as a matter of course.
Terry Rice from Gaston. It seems like to me here the state of Oregon is in the liquor business. There's a tavern on every corner. There's liquor or beer or wine or whatever sold in every grocery store. And now the state of Oregon... They're promoting the liquor business with one hand, and you're going to take away a man's gun, because my understanding is if he gets a DUI, he's got to sell his guns, right?
Right.
Does that seem fair?
Yes.
Seems just.
Don't drive drunk.
Well, I understand that, but where the state of Oregon is in the business.
We don't sell liquor for people to get drunk. We sell liquor so they can have an occasional drink. And we have lots. We make it a felony right now to do some things while intoxicated. Make it a misdemeanor to do other things. We make it a crime to drive while intoxicated.
Well, I understand that, but
we're gonna come back. We're backing off some on this by putting a 4-year limit on it. We're gonna come back and revisit it and consider some other options when the full committee is here. But for now, we're gonna probably just leave it like it is.
I just, if I might add on that, I think your observations about the state being in the liquor business are correct, but I would say that as Representative Mannix started to say, the use which is permissible doesn't include driving while intoxicated. And so when you do that, it's similar to committing some other crime for which a firearm, your possession of it, may be forfeited. And so I don't think there's a great distinction there between this proposed amendment and other ones where we just don't allow the possession of the firearm.
Representative Miller, would a man have to sell his every firearm?
No. You just can't buy any more for 4 years. Nobody can sell you.
See, I understood that he could not possess.
I'm sorry, I was loose in answering you. This has to do, you can't be sold a firearm if you had that conviction.
Okay.
You can keep your other guns, but you don't have to sell those, but you just can't go out and buy another one legally for 4 years.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. I finally got a chance to read through the bill, so we had to.
Really?
You maintain the right to keep and bear arms, you just don't get to bear any more arms for 4 years. That's an important distinction, actually.
Yes, it is.
Okay, we've got the amendment put forth by Representative Mannix. We haven't adopted it yet, I don't think, but we're going to put the 4-year limit on that also. Correct, Representative Mannix? Discussion, otherwise, objection? Okay, that's adopted. Okay, we've got, there's a glitch in the bill. It's sort of odd, talking about the parent of a guardian, or the parent or guardian of a minor child. And I think we define minor child as what, under 16?
Under 18.
Under 18. Where's that defined at, counsel?
Minor child?
Yes. Elsewhere in the statutes, or?
A lot of places.
Why don't we say person of it? Why don't we change this minor child to person under 18 years of age?
I agree with that. From giving that child a firearm. Can I ask a question about? Well, first of all, I agree with that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. Please, Representative Mannix, ask your question.
It seems to me that just because the feds are tight about this, we could recognize that the feds are tight, but still, why do we have to make the age differentiation between 18 and 21? I'm just raising this again as a... I was perfectly comfortable just saying 18 is the key age for anything, handgun or rifle. If the feds want to make a tougher restriction, all right, we have to follow that. But in a way, we're just being our own Oregonians and saying, I have no problem with someone who's 18 getting a handgun, but...
I agree with that. Representative Miller, how do you feel about that?
No problem.
We'll take that as a motion to just make all the ages 18, which might even allow us to get rid of a couple of sections in here. Council, can you take that conceptually?
Yeah.
Okay.
Should I ask whether or not law enforcement have a problem with that, since it won't make any real change because the federal law prohibits it anyway, but someday Congress may change the federal law, and I'd rather be ready to move.
No problem one way or another with that?
We can express our philosophical divergence with
the
federal Congress.
We've got the dual amendment stated by Representative Mannix with the first part talking about person under 18 years of age, a firearm, and I think we can just scratch out other than a handgun, and then elsewhere throughout the bill to take out our 21-year reference and talk about 18.
Where are you?
I'm on, where the heck am I at here? I'm on page 10, line 24. I think there'll be a number of sections in the bill that'll be affected by this.
We also have to change it. I'm starting on page 9, line 29.
Yes.
Council, we'll need to just do that. It'll make it a lot easier in the bill. We'll remove some sections and save some paperwork.
I don't think you'll remove sections or save paperwork, but I will lower the age to 18 if that's what the committee
We will
wants.
Make it conceptually consistent. And that means also, for instance, the parent or guardian of a person under the age of 18 from giving that person a firearm. Now, maybe I'm going too far there. No, we just said someone under 18 can't have a firearm, but we're going to let parents give their kids long guns but not handguns. Okay, I'll buy that distinction.
Okay.
lend their kids.
Okay, so we can say, we'll leave the other than, well, wait a minute here.
It says give, actually.
Temporary, right. But the next section down here, we have the temporary transfer of any firearm, and we should again say to a person under 18 years of age.
Well, I think that, Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yes, Representative.
I think the distinction here is a parent may give his child a long gun, but can't give his child a handgun to keep.
Except for temporary.
Now, the person, that parent may also lend his child a handgun for target practice or hunting, but cannot give the handgun to the child. That's the fine distinction we're making. And I'm willing to keep that distinction.
That's correct.
Counsel, are you ready? Do you understand this amendment?
Well, you're not amending anything except for changing the age. And Representative Mannix's distinction is a fine one, but he stated it eloquently and articulately. And it's a hard distinction to explain to people, but I think that he...
Do we need to make that distinction?
No, if you read this, I mean, I've gone round and round with legislative counsel on this. If you read the bill closely and think about what it says, that's exactly what it says. It's just making people read the fine print.
I think it'll make the world a brighter place, Representative Maddox, your motion.
Don't put her in the policy decision-making role, Mr. Chairman. Will it make the world a brighter place or not?
He didn't change the age. Didn't he just make it persons under 18 years of age?
Yes.
That's not downplaying.
A minor child is. Just adding more words.
Now we're going to, we could state somewhere, and just be consistent that the 21 provision is no longer there for handguns.
That's correct.
It's 18. And a minor child will, we could define once in here what a minor child is, and then you don't have to do this all constantly.
Well,
a minor child is a
way?
Person under the age of 18.
Would you rather do that and define minor in the definition section?
Mr. Chairman, how about that?
That'd be the other way to handle it.
Either way, just as long as I couldn't figure out from this what a minor child was. I think we talked about it once, and I couldn't remember.
A minor child is the same thing for all purposes in Oregon, which is somebody under 18.
Well, just
that doesn't change.
To make people understand that, put it in the definition section, and then just use minor child throughout. How about
I
that?
I was one of those kids with the coal stuff on his face, and I didn't know of any coal mines in Oregon. So,
is that what you want to do? You want to add the definition of minor to the definition section, and then we don't have to change it all over the place?
Yes.
Try to keep it. Let's see if we can bounce through a few other things real quick.
Wait a minute. Did you guys agree to that?
There was no murmur of disapproval when
I
said yes.
Any objection?
So the minor definition is in, and so then in places like back on page 10, it stays minor.
Yep.
And then.
When you say minor rather than minor child.
You don't even need a minor child. Got it.
Okay. Give it to a minor.
Got it.
Well, when we say minor child, we mean my child who is a minor. When we say minor, we mean a person who is a minor, and that doesn't have to be my child, and that is an important distinction.
I think it's a parent or guardian of a minor.
Minor child. It's really you want minor child, it's that parent's own child.
Just because I've got kids under 18 doesn't mean I can give other kids under 18.
Can we take this conceptually, counsel?
I've got it. I've got it specifically.
Any objection? None. Okay. Back up, we got one little place in here where we don't have any kind of, do we have it?
Uh-oh.
What?
Representative Miller's drawing pictures.
Representative Miller's drawing pictures. That means the evening is drawing close to an end here.
Let's see how many more amendments we can do in 3 minutes, Mr. Chairman.
We got 3 minutes. Let's see how far we can go. Section 8.
In the military, that was a mental discharge, I think.
The chair has to set our final meeting.
Well, I'll sit this.
It's final meeting.
It'll be a final meeting or not. I got some things sitting down in a couple of committees that I need to see move along before this bill goes anywhere. You know that, don't you, counsel? Final meeting.
Section 8?
Section 8.
I'm going to check that with the working groups. I mean, I'll meet with you.
Okay, under Section 8... I think we need a section.
Do you want this rate lowered to 18?
Yeah, we could do that throughout the bill.
Not necessarily.
Wait a minute. Concealed handgun license.
I'll
leave that at 21.
That's what I thought.
We can leave this one at 21. Counsel, given that the sentiments of the committee.
Yeah. Thank you. Just asking the question. My instructions were to change all ages to 21, and I wanted to.
That had to do with getting guns. Now, getting permits is another story.
I don't know a gun.
Okay, this section, I think we were trying to put a section here about the relief.
Where?
In this section, we...
No, the relief section, if you're turned down, you mean?
Well, I think...
Section 9 is if the application is approved. Section 9A is if the application is denied.
I think we've got this, you know, has no outstanding warrants for arrest, is not free under form, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, lines 19 and 20 of the new bill.
19 and 20. Okay,
this person has been granted relief under Section 11 of this act. It was added in after the last meeting.
Okay, I don't see it yet in the new bill. Where's...
Page 14 of the new bill.
Oh, sure.
On page 14 of the new bill, okay.
Page 14, line
you don't like.
19 and 20.
What page are we on?
14.
What line?
19 and 20.
We were just checking to make sure we had the relief section there, which I see that we put it in last time, so we'd apparently fixed that, so we're not going to have any.
We're okay there.
Well, that language strikes me as a little bit funny.
Well, actually, I think that that's some of the.
Does this make a lot of? We go in and then we say unless the person has been granted relief under. Would it make more sense to use this a different way and state it maybe proactively as opposed to the other direction? So we say.
I can read through it and discuss it with legislative council if you'd like.
Let's do that. See if we can state it positively instead. If the person has not been granted relief, instead of coming at the end and saying unless.
I could see the. Go ahead and stating the rest of these. They were trying to come up with a way of stating it separately. And I think that's why they did it that way, is to try to state it separately in terms of the relief provisions. The relief provisions only apply to those subsections, A through E, on pages 14 to 15. And they're trying to limit it that way. Actually, once you take a quick look at Section 11, it fits. So I'll leave it up to Legislative Council as to format.
And then this one, real quickly, if we get Representative Miller wise here, on page 19, line 12, we need to have an unlawful, involving unlawful violence or unlawful threats of violence. Or threats of unlawful violence.
Lawful violence?
Yeah. I used to do that practically for a living when I was in college, so.
Well, I mean.
Wrestling?
A pattern of behavior.